south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, first off, I have to start off by saying that I still get emails from people asking me about how to get rid of fluoride in the water. I suppose most of them address that question to me because I offer for free my own personal plans for a very cool and cheap under-the-counter ceramic water filter kit, which will surely give you better pure water by far than any bottled water you can buy. So for all you listeners out there who didn't know it, I have my own do-it-yourself two-stage water purification system that's positioned under the counter at the kitchen sink. I just drag it around and reinstall it anytime I settle at a place and stay for an extended period of time. It's just basically two common 9-inch canisters, the kind you could buy at most any hardware store, and it's easy to connect and disconnect. I'm not saying that it's portable, but once it's installed, man, is it convenient. Now, for my portable water filtration use, I always recommend that Sawyer filter that I've talked about in past shows. That's a filter that's around $50 and it'll last a lifetime. So, if you're off trekking around for a day or a week or a month or more, use this Sawyer filter. It's so small, convenient, and effective, you'd be nuts not to get one. And the real cool thing about it is that it's got a little cup attachment that'll slap onto any water faucet. So, as soon as you turn on the cold water, and always use cold water, you get super pure water right away. No pumping or shaking or squeezing like those old water filter devices that were very good like the Katydyn, but also very expensive. Not to mention fragile and messy, and it took a lot of elbow grease to get a cup of water. So compared to just a few years ago, we've got it easy these days. Just one more thing about that little Sawyer filter, which I don't sell or make a commission on. I just recommend it because it's great. As for its size and packing it away, it's actually smaller than an empty toilet paper roll. Not to get overly anal or anything, it'll fit right inside one of those toilet paper tubes. And that's just how you should carry it, because when you're down here in Latin America, especially off the Gringo Tourist Trail, TP and bathrooms are not necessarily joined at the hip like rum and coke. Now, as for my under-the-counter water system, and remember, I give those plans away for free, you could pick up all the parts anywhere in the world, wherever there's a pool supply store or a big hardware store like Ace Hardware, etc. Now, as for the ceramic cartridge, you get that and the carbon block filter, which is the final filter, at a pool supply store, but everything else you can get at a hardware store. Note, it's a two-stage filter and thus has two plastic canisters. You could put the whole thing together yourself for $100 or less. And it has one of those ceramic cartridge filters in it that you could scrub as it gets clogged, so if you're careful, it could surely last you 10 years. And the second part is a carbon block filter that you might want to change every 6 months to a year, depending, of course, on the size of your family. So in a two-person household, you might change it maybe once a year. Look at it this way. For about 10 years, your only cost is going to be the carbon filter, which goes for about $15 to $20. Sure beats the hell out of expensive bottled water, huh? Not to mention it's many times more pure. In fact, you know, I always shake my head when I see that big bottled water truck pull up in the neighborhood to drop off 5-gallon jugs of this stuff to all the upper middle class houses along the way. By the way, it's water that sits in the sun for hours at a time, too. Plastic jugs and all. That's exactly what you bargain for. So-called pure water, loaded with microscopic molecules of plastic. Bet your liver and kidneys have a field day with that stuff. I keep thinking, these upper-middle-class Latins think they're so smart. What a bunch of idiots. And get this, you know what they're thinking about me? They're thinking, what an idiot that gringo guy is. He never has any bottled water delivered to his house. Stupid gringo, he's drinking water from the tap. Little do they know, huh? But you know, I'm not here to train the undereducated locals, no matter how much money they have. I learned a long time ago by going to parties with people like that, you can talk to them about health and diet all day, and they listen and they seem attentive. But unless they've seen it on TV, they'll rarely change their patterns. For example, a huge percentage of the upscale Latins these days are drinking Diet Coke and Pepsi and all those prepackaged goodies with artificial sweeteners in them. Sound familiar? And I'll tell you, down here, having money doesn't correlate at all to having knowledge or brains. I mean, come on, everybody who listens to this program knows there's something intrinsically wrong with artificial sweeteners, not to mention GMOs, genetically modified stuff. Yet, I don't think I've ever met a single Latin American who actually reads a label in the grocery store. As far as that goes, they might as well put the ingredient lists in Chinese. Come to think of it, some of them are. So anyway, about those emails concerning fluoride. Well, that you don't have to worry about, because there's only one country in Latin America that's even thinking about putting fluoride in, and that's Argentina. Buenos Aires, to be precise. But they're so broke over there now and the economy's collapsing, I don't think that's quite on their list of priorities. Not anymore, it isn't. But do pay attention here. And I believe this has to do with idiot politicians in Latin America. Get this. When you go to the grocery store to buy salt, you better look at the label, because in more than 3/4 of the salt brands I've seen, guess what? They're putting fluoride in, not to mention iodine, which I guess in itself isn't half bad, because your thyroid gland actually does use iodine. But fluoride? Check it out. Do look at the packages carefully. In fact, sometimes the lettering's so small that you won't even pick up on it. So do look for fluoride in the salt, and don't buy it. And the word is fluoruro in Spanish. That's F-L-U-O-R-U-R-O. Fluoruro. When you see it, you'll recognize it. It looks almost like fluoride. Fluoruro. Close enough, anyway. And worse yet, I've been in some stores where you can't even find salt without fluoride. Yuck. So what are you supposed to do? Well, luckily enough, seems like all the big grocery store chains, including Walmart and Costco, and they've got thousands of stores here now, they carry an imported brand or two of natural sea salt. In fact, the last box I picked up was imported from Israel, which cost me, I guess, about $2 for a pound box. And of course, now, all over here in Latin America, even well off the gringo tourist trail, you can find many overpriced health food stores like you can up in the States. I know I mentioned in a past show, they've got some bad whole food stores clones, mostly in high-end malls in the medium and large-sized cities. In fact, I'm surprised no one's ripped off the name yet, Whole Foods. They could, you know, no one cares. Not that Whole Foods up in the States is any great shakes, but it's all about that gringo advantage again, and Latins are always trying to copy gringo things. And generally, they do a pretty half-assed job of it, as you well know. Anyway, what I'm saying is you don't have to scour the countryside looking for natural sea salt without iodine or fluorine. And by the way, that's what I use, sea salt of some kind or another. And by the way, there's one more thing I'd never buy down here. That's sugar, even though it's amazingly dirt cheap because, well, that's where sugarcane is grown, down here in Latin America. Now, in a previous show, I may have mentioned that in one of the stupidest moves known to man, Latin American sugar producers are now fortifying their sugar with vitamin A and other ingredients. And they're advertising how good it is for you. What a bunch of doofuses, huh? Which is another reason not to buy it, besides the fact that pure sugar cane is detrimental to your health. Though, I'll admit, infinitely better than high fructose corn syrup made out of GMO corn from up in the States. So I don't use it, though I keep a jar of it around the house for the occasional clueless visitor that comes over and wants sugar in their coffee or whatever. Now, I don't totally abstain from sweets. I do use the local honey. And honey in Spanish is miel, M-I-E-L, miel. Easy to remember, miel. Just think of oatmeal, miel, whatever works, right? So, local honey is pretty much all I use, which is also dirt cheap here. If you go to one of the local big markets, you can get a pound for as little as $2. I'm not talking about processed packaged honey from a big company. You don't need to buy that stuff, which is usually pasteurized and who knows what else. Luckily, there's no imported honey down here in Latin America because so many little farmers and families in rural areas have their own colonies. And the reason why I say, luckily, there's no imported honey is because I know some honey producers here who tell me that up in the States, there's a lot of imported honey coming in from China now that is actually not 100% honey at all, though it says so on the label. It's actually mixed with high fructose corn syrup. Get that. I mean, don't get that. Anyway, down here, if you gotta sweeten things up, honey is definitely the way to go. Turns out in every village and city and in a lot of neighborhoods, you can always buy fresh honey in some of the little corner stores, and you can really tell that it's been hand-packed by a very small outfit, maybe even a kitchen table family operation. And I'll tell you, there's nothing like it, because in every little town of origin, the honey tastes a bit different because there are different kinds of bees and different kinds of flowers. And if you want a little hint on where to find the local honey in the town where you happen to be, just go into one of the little mom-and-pop bakeries. Oftentimes you'll see they sell it right there on the counter. Many times the glass jar won't even have a label on it, but you'll know it's honey because it's obvious. Sometimes it'll even have little chunks of wax floating in it. Don't be put off if you see that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, if you're looking for natural and organic, what could be more natural than that? Oh, and one more thing about that fluoride question I keep getting in emails. It's true, my little homemade water filter system does not remove fluoride, and neither does that little Sawyer filter. But who cares? You don't need it down here. However, up in the States, it's a huge problem, right? So my recommendation for those of you up there who want to get your fluoride out, buy one of those Berkey fluoride filters. You ever hear of that? Berkey, B-E-R-K-E-Y. You can buy one of those little filters online for $40 or so, and it removes greater than 95% of all fluorine, as well as arsenic and other heavy metals. The only problem with the thing is that it's not easily attached to any other water filtration system except a Berkey. And the cheapest Berkey out there is between $200 and $300. Way too expensive, considering all the cheaper, better alternatives. But if you're good at tinkering with things, you could get that $40 or so fluoride filter to work on pretty much any water purifier. Though it might not look pretty, it'll work. And what's nice about it is that it could last a year or so, easy. Just wanted to let you all know about that. It's probably your cheapest alternative if you want to get the fluoride out. Or forget about that and move on down to Latin America. No fluoride here. Except, like I said, in the table salt. Which means, unfortunately, the food in the restaurants down here has surely been cooked in that salt, and the salt shakers most likely loaded up with that stuff too. So what do? Cook at home or bring your own. Or not. Enough said about that. Okay, now let me bring up something else you've probably never heard before. Though it will affect you if you come down here to certain places in Latin America. I'm sure you all know by now that any Latin American citizen has to jump through huge hoops to get a visa to visit the States. Even a 90-day tourist visa, or perhaps a 4-day visit to Disneyland, requires a heavy amount of paperwork and proof of a long-standing job and financial means and a bank account, etc., etc., not to mention a possession of a credit card with at least a $2,000 maximum, as well as a police report, etc. And if you're missing any of that, you just do not get a visa. Which means only about 1 in 20 or 25 Latin Americans could ever qualify for a U.S. visa. Now, I'm not talking about a green card here. That's another thing altogether and much more complicated. I'm just talking about to go, let's say, to Disneyland. And along with running all over town to get that paperwork crap, when a Latin goes down to the U.S. consulate in his country and applies for a visa, they've got to fork over $150 to $200, which is a non-refundable processing fee whether their visa is approved or not. And like I said, in the vast majority of cases, it's rejected. So that's $150 to $200 down the tubes, which is a couple of weeks' pay for the average Latin American worker. Well, here's what you have to know now. Certain Latin countries are retaliating. They figure if their citizens have to pay $150 to $200 to apply for a visa, when you land in their country as a gringo, they're going to retaliate and make you pay the same. So here's how it stands right now. U.S. citizens in Brazil must now pay a whopping $180 just for a visit. You pay that or you won't get out of the airport. And as you might imagine, with the upcoming World Cup starting in June, Brazil stands to make tens of millions of dollars off of U.S. visitors alone. Now, note that European visitors to Brazil do not have to pay that. And it's not just Brazil. As of 2013, U.S. citizens must now pay $160 to enter Argentina. And that's really just Argentina repaying the favor that their own citizens have to pay, the exact same amount, to apply for a U.S. visa at the American consulate in their country. And get this, the U.S. is the only country in the Western world, the only first world country, whose citizens must pay that fee on entering. Europeans, Canadians, Australians, Kiwis, Japanese, Koreans, Israelis, etc., they walk right in. So, let's have a reality check here. All you guys and gals up in Minnesota and Cleveland who think that U.S. passport of yours is some kind of gold card. Well, it used to have that kind of status, but it's sinking fast. Meaning it's time to think about seriously getting residency in another country and possibly a second passport before it's too late. Time's a-wasting. And as you probably know by now, Uncle Sam's making it harder and harder for you to travel. In fact, I've got it from a very good source up north that in the next year or two, Uncle Sam's going to make each and every one of you guys and gals up there jump through a number of new hoops, not only to renew your passports, but you'll actually have to apply to get permission to leave the country, even if it's just a carnival cruise or a package deal to a resort in Cancun. Come on, you guys. Time to get off your dead asses. You've got to start making some plans. Do you even have a plan B? God, I hope you do. Now, that's a convenient segue to bring up my upcoming July Expat Wisdom Seminar in Central America. And of course, it's well off the regular gringo tourist trail. Just where that gringo advantage is most obvious. And when you come, you'll find out all about those residencies and second passports too. Not to mention offshore trusts and anonymous bank accounts and corporations, etc. Details I really can't talk too much about on the radio, that's for sure. And don't worry, when you come down, I'll hook you up with all the right people to accomplish those things. If that's what you're looking for, we can hook you right up. So do get on board. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com, look at the top of the page for the Latin seminar link, click on it, and you'll get all the details. Time's a-wasting. You know that. I'm serious. And do remember, I'm only letting 25 people in on it. So anyway, you got Argentina and Brazil charging you $150 to fly in, just for the visa. Chile also hits you $160 for a tourist visa at the airport too. And if you're an American landing in Bolivia, be prepared to fork out $135 for one of their visas. Now, Paraguay doesn't charge Europeans a thing, but they charge Americans $160. So think of it. Let's say you wanted to go to South America for 3 or 4 months and hit a bunch of countries. Well, if you make the complete circuit, you're looking at paying $1,000 or more in visa fees. Of course, there are still a few countries in South America that don't charge visa fees to Americans, but that's all set to change in the near future. Congresses and legislatures in those countries, seeing how easy it is to nail American tourists like that, since so many of their neighbors are doing it already. Right now, they're discussing and debating and, in fact, licking their chops at the prospect of bleeding Americans with heavy visa charges because, well, they figure rich traveling gringos can afford it and they're doing the same to their citizens when they apply for visas to the States. And, you know, all of that makes traveling in Central America, not South America now, Central America, look pretty damn good. There, you don't get nailed with big visa fees, though there are some airport charges, big ones, included in your tickets, generally, to Costa Rica and Panama. More than $100 in Panama, but like I said, it's in your ticket, so you don't see it, generally. However, if you go through a land border, they're only going to hit you for maybe $10 or $20 at the most. Oh, and by the way, note this, Panama really likes to screw tourists, not to mention anyone that's going through the Panama Canal by boat. In fact, if you come in by sea, whether through the canal or not, they're going to nail you with a fee of over $100, which doesn't apply if you're on a cruise ship. In that case, it's the cruise line that pays a blanket fee. So somewhere or another, it's included in the cost of your cruise ticket. Now, of course, I mentioned in the past show what it costs to go through the Panama Canal if you're bringing your own boat, so I won't get into that now, but it's pretty hefty. So if you're interested, go back into the archives and check it out. Now, of course, all Latin countries have an exit tax, which again is a way for thieving Latin governments to steal money from you. Because no one actually knows where that money goes. Well, we actually do. We know it goes in the pockets of the politicians. Anyway, you'll end up paying $10 to $20 when you leave a Latin country. though generally only at the airports. If you go through a land border, you'll find that most of the time it's either free or under $5. In fact, last time I passed through a land border in Honduras, I think I paid $3. Oh, and here's a story for you. Not so long ago, I was at the Belize-Mexican border, and I saw a scruffy backpacker from the U.S. sitting on the bench outside the border station, kind of just camping out for the day on the Belize side. The way it looked, it seemed like he'd been there for hours and hours. Turns out he didn't have the $10 or $20, whatever it was, to get into Mexico. So, there he was outside the border station with a backpack full of fresh fruit, oranges and papayas and bananas and all that. And as you may or may not know, you cannot take edible stuff like that across certain borders. If it's in a can or sealed bag or unopened box from a grocery store, they'll let you bring most of that stuff through, but fresh fruit or vegetables, forget about it. Even bread or bakery products, no way. You gotta leave it there at the border. Some stupid rule about not allowing pests or insects or whatever that might be traveling or hitching a ride in or on the fruit that may contaminate the fruit in the adjacent country. That's the official reason anyway. So say the signs at almost all border stations. In Spanish, of course. But you know, that reasoning just doesn't wash. And those border guards who go back and forth all the time don't wash much either. So I'll bet you that just one of those border agents has more pests and vermin living in his greasy hair than in a truckload of bananas or papayas. So anyway, this down-and-out gringo backpacker with an armful of fruit, he's been told he can't bring any of that stuff across, so he's out there selling the stuff with no takers. He had to somehow scratch up the dough to leave the country. And the thing that you learn if you travel down here enough, nearly all of these land borders, they only take cash. Now, this guy did have a U.S. credit card, so he wasn't totally destitute. But the two decrepit ATM machines on the Belize side kept rejecting his card, which really isn't unusual. Not in these little desolate border station pockets, anyway. And the guy at the immigration window was real helpful. He told him once he got over to the Mexican side, there were 6 or 7 ATMs there. Only this guy was in a catch-22. The guy couldn't get across to get to the Mexican side because he didn't have the $10 exit fee to get out. Now remember, this is a very small, slow, and lazy border station. You don't see many people going across at all. I mean, let's face it, how many people do you know who've made it to Belize in a car by way of Mexico? Not many. It's a rough journey, you know? Even I wouldn't try it. Not these days. So anyway, in an effort to help out a fellow American in a tough spot, I gave him $10. And believe me, I wasn't that quick to offer because the guy was pretty greasy and scruffy. In fact, pretty ripe. He didn't want to be downwind from him, I'll tell you that. It's funny how backpackers don't notice things like that. You know, a shower once a week and maybe wash the clothes once a month would be a good start. But who am I to judge? I'm not bunking with the guy, right? Anyway, it was obvious he just didn't seem to be worried about his situation at all. I'm sure he'd have camped out there and made the best of it. Probably until some other like-minded backpacker came along and then they'd be off together. But not through that border crossing. Not without the exit fee. And you know, generally, when you meet long-term backpacking gringos like that down here, they don't have much of a solid plan. They pretty much wander around like saddle tramps in the Old West and they don't really care where they crash. I guess it's part of the adventure for them, you know? They always seem to make do somehow. To each his own, you know? Anyway, I gave him $10 and he handed me all that fruit. So now he had the money to get through the border and I was stuck with the fruit that I couldn't take through either. So I walked up to the fence where there were a bunch of scruffy kids on the Mexican side playing soccer. They were maybe between 8 and 15 years old. Real poor kids, the unwashed masses, you know? Then I started tossing the apples and the bananas and the pears over to them. And naturally, they all came running up to the fence for the free handout. Now, I'm doing this about 50 feet away from two guards sitting on plastic chairs outside the garage-sized building, basically a shack that was the Belize border station. And as I tossed the fruit, they were smiling and nodding and egging me on like, "That's a good gringo. Give it up to the kids." So, do you get the irony here? I can't take that fruit across the border to Mexico for fear of transporting dangerous hidden insects over the border. But if that fruit finds its way over the border and lands in the hands of some kids, well, that's totally okay. And, of course, those pesky insects themselves, they know the rules, and they don't trespass either, right?
Duh.
But back to that visa stuff. Anyway, down in Central America, nobody, and I mean nobody's talking about a big visa fee. Again, I'm talking about Central America, you know, Panama northward. But you can count on all the countries in South America jumping on board since their neighbors are all doing it and getting away with it. Okay, getting towards the end of the show a bit here, but I can fit in a few more things. Here's something strange. For all of you guys out there named Ronnie or Ron, of course, that's short for Ronald, right? Now, down here in Latin America, they've got a million and one nicknames, too, which I'm not going to get into. However, if your name happens to be Ron, down here it would be Ronaldo. I'm sure you've all heard that name before. However, they don't shorten it to Ron for two good reasons. One, Ron is the word for rum in Latin America. R-O-N, Ron, is rum, R-U-M. So you wouldn't go naming your kid Ron down here because you'd be calling him a rummy, basically. And reason number two is because the common term for a June bug or a beetle is Ron Ron, R-O-N, R-O-N. You say it twice. So most Latins wouldn't go naming their kid after a June bug or a beetle, though they might, who knows. So that's why when gringos come down here named Ron, Latins always snicker a bit, thinking, why would those gringos name their kids after a drink or a bug? Anyway, the reason why I brought that up is because at our last seminar, we had a really nice guy down here named Ron, a very interesting guy from Florida. When he left, I found out he made quite a good impression on some of our expat wisdom translator ladies. They said he was great fun to hang around with. Divertido in Spanish. Divertido, and that's a great compliment, actually. And if you write out that Spanish word divertido, it looks a lot like the English word diversion. You know, technically a diversion takes your mind off of something. So divertido means a pleasant diversion. And by the way, there's another word that Latins use if they really like you. And I don't mean in a romantic sense. I mean, they just like being around you because you're fun. They'll say, you're muy alegre. That's muy alegre. Muy meaning very. And alegre meaning the same as the Italian or Latin words, allegro or allegretto. You'll see that on sheet music all the time, written for guitars and piano and organs and such. If it says allegretto on the music sheet or allegro, you're supposed to play it lively, quick, and happy. So, be on the lookout. If someone says you're muy alegre, you're making a very good impression.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.